And now we present our Sunday play.
She Stoops to Conquer, or The Mistakes of a Knight, by Oliver Goldsmith. Adapted by Sue Wilson, with music by Anthea Gomez.
Charming, quite charming, my pretty innocence. All dressed out as usual, my Kate. Goodness, what a quantity of superfluous silk has thou got about thee, girl. Yeah, I could never teach the fools of this age that the indigent world could be clothed out of the trimmings of the vein.
You know our agreement, sir. You allow me the daytime to receive and pay visits and to dress in my own manner. And in the evening, I put on my housewife's dress to please you.
Well, remember, I insist on the terms of our agreement. And by the by, I believe I should have occasion to try your obedience this very evening.
I protest, sir, I don't comprehend your meaning.
Then, to be plain with you, Kate, the young gentleman I have chosen to be your husband is expected from town this very day. I have his father's letter, in which he informs me his son is set out, and that he intends to follow himself shortly after.
Indeed? Oh, I wish I'd known something of this before. Oh, bless me, how shall I behave? It's 1,000 to 1 I shan't like him. Our meeting will be so formal and so like a thing of business that I shall find no room for friendship or esteem.
Depend upon it, child. I never control your choice. But Mr. Marlowe, whom I have decided upon, is the son of my old friend, Sir Charles Marlowe, of whom you have heard me talk so often. The young gentleman has been bred a scholar and is designed for an employment in the service of his country. I am told he's a man of an excellent understanding.
Is he?
Very generous.
Well, I believe I shall like him.
Young and brave.
I'm sure I shall like him.
And very handsome.
He's mine. I'll have him. My dear papa, say no more.
And to crown it all, Kate, he's one of the most bashful and reserved young fellows in all the world.
Eh? You've frozen me to death again. That word reserved has undone all the rest of his accomplishments. A reserved lover, it is said, always makes a suspicious husband.
On the contrary, modesty seldom resides in a breast that is not enriched with nobler virtues. It was the very feature in his character that first struck me.
Oh, he must have more striking features to catch me, I promise you. However, if he be so young, so handsome, so everything you mention, I believe he'll do still. I think I'll have him.
Aye, Kate, but there is still an obstacle. It's more than an even wager. He may not have you.
Why, dear Papa, why will you mortify one so? Well, if he refuses, instead of breaking my heart as his indifference, I'll only break my glass for its flattery, set my cap to some newer fashion, and look out for some less difficult admirer.
Bravely resolved. In the meantime, I'll go and prepare the servants for his reception. We so seldom see company that they want as much training as a company of recruits.
Oh, Lord, this news of Papa's puts me all in a flutter. Young, handsome. These he put last, but I put them foremost. Sensible, good-natured, I like all that. But then reserved and sheepish, that's much against him. Yet can't he be cured of his timidity by being taught to be proud of his wife? Yes. And can't I... But I vow I'm disposing of the husband before I have secured the lover.
Oh,
I'm glad you've come, Constance, my dear. Tell me, how do I look? Is there anything whimsical about me? Is it one of my well-looking days? Or am I in face today?
Perfectly, my dear.
Yet, now I look again.
Bless me. Sure no accident has happened among the canary birds or the goldfish. Has your brother or the cat been meddling? Or has the last novel been too moving?
No, nothing of all this. I have been threatened.
indeed.
The son of Sir Charles Marlowe?
No. As I live, the most intimate friend of Mr. Hastings. My admirer. They are never asunder. I believe you must have seen him when we lived in town.
Never.
Oh, he is a very singular character. I assure you. Among women of reputation and virtue, he is...
Come, shall I tell you? Oh, where is the pond you who yet might relieve me? My heart wants to love, but will love in this.
Charming. Quite charming, my pretty innocence. All dressed out as usual, my Kate. Goodness, what a quantity of superfluous silk has thou got about thee, girl. Yeah, I could never teach the fools of this age that the indigent world could be clothed out of the trimmings of the vein.
You know our agreement, sir. You allow me the daytime to receive and pay visits and to dress in my own manner. And in the evening, I put on my housewife's dress to please you.
Well, remember, I insist on the terms of our agreement. And by the by, I believe I should have occasion to try your obedience this very evening.
I protest, sir, I don't comprehend your meaning.
Then, to be plain with you, Kate, the young gentleman I have chosen to be your husband is expected from town this very day. I have his father's letter, in which he informs me his son is set out, and that he intends to follow himself shortly after.
Indeed? Oh, I wish I'd known something of this before. Oh, bless me, how shall I behave? Oh, it's 1,000 to 1 I shan't like him. Our meeting will be so formal and so like a thing of business that I shall find no room for friendship or esteem.
Depend upon it, child. I'll never control your choice. But Mr. Marlowe, whom I have decided upon, is the son of my old friend, Sir Charles Marlowe, of whom you have heard me talk so often. The young gentleman has been bred a scholar and is designed for an employment in the service of his country. I am told he's a man of an excellent understanding.
Is he?
Very generous.
Well, I believe I shall like him.
Young and brave.
I'm sure I shall like him.
And very handsome.
He's mine. I'll have him. My dear papa, say no more.
And to crown it all, Kate, he's one of the most bashful and reserved young fellows in all the world.
Eh? You've frozen me to death again. That word reserved has undone all the rest of his accomplishments. A reserved lover, it is said, always makes a suspicious husband.
On the contrary, modesty seldom resides in a breast that is not enriched with nobler virtues. It was the very feature in his character that first struck me.
Well, he must have more striking features to catch me, I promise you. However, if he be so young, so handsome, so everything you mention, I believe he'll do still. I think I'll have him.
Aye, Kate, but there is still an obstacle. It's more than an even wager. He may not have you.
Why, dear Papa, why will you mortify one so? Well, if he refuses, instead of breaking my heart as his indifference, I'll only break my glass for its flattery, set my cap to some newer fashion, and look out for some less difficult admirer.
Bravely resolved. In the meantime, I'll go and prepare the servants for his reception. We so seldom see company that they want as much training as a company of recruits.
Oh, Lord, this news of Papa's puts me all in a flutter. Young, handsome. These he put last, but I put them foremost. Sensible, good-natured, I like all that. But then reserved and sheepish, that's much against him. Yet can't he be cured of his timidity by being taught to be proud of his wife? Yes. And can't I... But I vow I'm disposing of the husband before I have secured the lover.
Ah,
Kate! Oh, I'm glad you've come, Constance. My dear, tell me, how do I look? Is there anything whimsical about me? Is it one of my well-looking days? Oh, am I in face today?
Perfectly, my dear.
Yet, now I look again.
Bless me. Sure no accident has happened among the canary birds or the goldfish. Has your brother or the cat been meddling? Or has the last novel been too moving?
No, nothing of all this. I have been threatened. Oh, I can just get it out. I have been threatened with a lover.
And his name
is Marlowe.
Indeed.
The son of Sir Charles Marlowe.
No. As I live, the most intimate friend of Mr. Hastings, my admirer. They are never asunder. I believe you must have seen him when we lived in town.
Never.
Oh, he is a very singular character, I assure you. Among women of reputation and virtue, he is the modestest man alive.
Oh.
But his acquaintance give him a very different character among creatures of another stamp. Oh. You understand me?
Oh, an odd character indeed. I shall never be able to manage him. What shall I do?
Sure, think no more of him. But trust to occurrences for success.
But how goes on your own affair, my dear? Oh. Has my mother been courting you for my brother Tony, as you know?
Oh, I have just come from one of our agreeable tete-a-tetes. She has been saying 100 tender things and praising her pretty monster as the very pink of perfection.
And her partiality is such that she actually thinks him so. A fortune like yours is no small temptation.
No.
Besides, as she has the sole management of it, I'm not surprised to see her unwilling to let it go out of the family.
A fortune like mine, which chiefly consists in jewels, is no such mighty temptation. But at any rate, if my dear Hastings be but constant, I make no doubt to be too hard for her at last. However, I let her suppose that I am in love with her son, and she never once dreams that my affections are fixed upon another.
My good brother holds out stoutly. I could almost love him for hating you so.
He is a good-natured creature at bottom, and I'm sure would wish to see me married to anybody but himself. But my aunt's bell rings for our afternoon's walk round the vegetable plots. Hello! Courage is necessary, as our affairs are critical.
Would it were bedtime and all were well.
Trifles.
Master Lumpkin, you do trifle with me.
More ale for Master Muggins.
Leave all my castle, sir. I must attend to others' needs as well as thine.
Bet you shall bounce on my knee as I do in the saddle, and a deal of pleasure it'll give us both.
You may ride my stallion and eat her.
Oh. Aye, aye, but stroke my dobbin and he'll come as often as you wish.
Now, Master Lumpkin, pray a song.
Would you hear a lark drown in a barrel of ale?
Knock yourself down for a song.
Well, then, I'll sing you, gentlemen, and my lady, a song I made upon this alehouse, the Three Pigeons. Let schoolmasters puzzle their brain with grammar and nonsense and learning. Good liquor, I stoutly maintain, gives genius a better discerning. Let them brag of their heathenish gods, their Lethes, their Styxes and Stygians, their Quids, their Quays and their Quahos. They're all but a parcel of pigeons. When Methodist preachers come down, A-preaching that drinking is sinful. I'll wager the rascals a crown. They always preach best with a skin. But when you come down with your pence for a slice of their scurvy religion, I'll leave it to men of sense. But you, my good friend, are the pigeon.
Tarrarle, tarrarle.
Then come put the punch bowl about. And let us be merry and clever. Our hearts and our liquors are stout. Here's the three jolly pigeons forever. Let some cry up woodcock or hare. Your bustards, your ducks and your widgeons. But of all the birds in the air, here's a toast to the three jolly pigeons.
Tarrarle, tarrarle, tarrarle.
Because he never gives us nothing that's low.
Oh, damn anything that's low. I can't bear it.
The genteel finger's the genteel thing at any time. If so be that a gentleman be's in a concatenation accord.
Well, no, I am obligated to dance a bear. A man may be a gentleman for all that. May this be my poison. If my bear shall ever dance, but to the very genteelest of tunes. What a party, though, the minuet in our ear.
The squire's not come to his own. Oh. It would be well for all the publicans within 10 mile round of
it. Oh. God, and so it would, bet my heart. I'd then show what it was to keep choice of company.
Oh. He takes after his own father for that.
Aye, he do.
To be sure, old Squire Lumpkin was the finest gentleman I ever set my eyes on. For winding the straight on, or beating a thicket for an air, or a wench he never had his fellow. And it was a saying in the place that he kept the best horses, dogs, and girls of the old county.
God, and when I'm of age, I'll be no bastard, I promise you. I've been thinking of you, Bet Bouncer, and the miller's grey mare to begin with. But come, my boys, drink about and be merry, for you pay no reckoning. Well, Tom Twist, what's the matter?
There be two gentlemen on horseback at the door. They've lost their way up on the forest. And they're talking something about Mr. Hardcastle.
Sure as can be, one of them must be the gentleman that's coming down to court my sister. Do they seem to be Londoners?
I believe they may. They look for all the world like Frenchmen.
Then, landlord, take me to them, and I'll set them right in a twinkling. Gentlemen. And sweet Bet.
No!
As they mayn't be good enough company for you, I'll view their hosiery and give you a report in the squeezing of a lemon.
Whelp and hound this half year. Now, if I pleased, I could be so revenged upon the old Grumbletonian. I shall soon be worth 1,500 a year, and let him frighten me out of that if he can. So, there stand the two dandy prats. Hush, whilst I snoop on them.
What a tedious, uncomfortable day we have had of it. We were told it was but 40 miles across the country, and we have come above 80.
And all, Marlowe, from that unaccountable reserve of yours that would not let us inquire more frequently on the way.
I own Hastings. I am unwilling to lay myself under an obligation to everyone I meet, and often stand the chance of an unmannerly answer.
At present, however, we are not likely to receive any answer.
Ho hum. Ho hum.
Ah! Now then, a fellow that can help you's on his way. Will your honours dismount?
Here, hold my bridle.
Aye, sir.
I confess myself sore in the saddle and bowed in the leg.
Yes, not the prettiest picture to present to our mistresses.
I own Hastings. I have little stomach for our enterprise.
Oh, come, man. You're no gawk with the ladies. I know you for a rattle and a rake at the flattened tart in Grotto Gardens.
No offence, gentlemen. But I'm told you've been inquiring for one Mr. Hardcastle in these parts. Do you know what part of the country you are in?
Not in the least, sir, but should thank you for information.
Well, know the way you came?
No, sir, but if you can inform us.
Aye, gentlemen, if you know neither the road you're going, nor where you are, nor the road you came, the first thing I have to inform you is that you've lost your way.
We wanted no ghosts to tell us that.
Pray, gentlemen, may I be so bold as to ask the place from whence you came?
That's not necessary towards directing us where we are to go.
No offence, but question for question is all fair, you know. Pray, gentlemen, is not this same Hardcastle a crush-grained, old-fashioned, whimsical fella with an ugly face, a daughter, and a pretty son?
We have not seen the gentleman, but he has the family you mentioned.
A daughter? A tall, traipsing, trolloping, talkative maypole.
Indeed.
The son? A pretty, well-bred, agreeable youth that everybody is so fond of.
Our information differs in this. The daughter is said to be well-bred and beautiful. The son, an awkward booby, reared up and spoiled at his mother's apron string.
Then, gentlemen, all I have to tell you is you won't reach Mr. Hardcastle's house this night, oh, I believe.
Unfortunate.
It's a damned long, dark, boggy, dirty, dangerous way. Tom Twist, tell the gentleman the way to Mr. Hardcastle's. Any more? Mr. Hardcastle's of Quagmire Marsh, you understand me?
Master Hardcastle's. Oh, lock a daisy, me masters. You come a deadly deal wrong. That when you came to the bottom of the hill, you should have crossed down Squash Lane.
Crossed down Squash Lane?
Then you were to keep straight forward till you came to four roads.
Come to where four roads meet?
Aye, but you must be sure to take only one of them.
Sir, you're facetious.
Then, keeping to the right, you are to go sideways till you come upon Crackskull Common. There you must look sharp for the track of the wheel. And go forward till you come to Farmer Murrin's barn. Now, coming to the farmer's barn, you are to turn to the right, and then to the left, and then to the right about again, till you find out the old mill.
Please, man, we're going to soon find out the longitude.
What's to be done, Marlowe?
Well, this house promises but a poor reception, though perhaps the landlord can accommodate us.
Alack, master, we have but one spare bed in the old house.
And to my knowledge, that's taken up by three lodgers already.
Oh, aye.
I've hit it.
Don't you think, Tom Twist, our landlady could accommodate the gentleman by the fireside with three chairs and a bolster?
And a bolster?
I hate sleeping by the fireside. And I detest your three chairs and a bolster.
You do, do you? Then let me see. What if you go on a mile further to the Buck's Head? The old Buck's Head on the hill. One of the best inns in the whole county.
Oh, ho! So, we have escaped an adventure for this night, however.
Sure, you bent sending them to your father's as an inn, be you?
Mum, you fool, let them find that out. You have only to keep on straightforward till you come to a large old house by the roadside. You'll see a pair of large horns over the door. Now, that's the sign. Drive up the yard and call stoutly above.
Sir, we are obliged to you. Servants can't miss the way.
No, no. But I must tell you, though, the landlord is rich and going to leave off business.
Oh.
So he wants to be thought a gentleman saving your presence. Well, he'll be forgiving you his company.
Oh.
And God, if you mind him, he'll persuade you that his mother was an alderman and his aunt a justice of peace.
A troublesome old blade, to be sure. But it keeps as good wines and beds as any in the whole county.
Well, if he supplies us with these, we shall want no further connection. We are to turn to the right, did you say?
No. Straight forward. I'll just fetch my horse and show you a piece of the way.
Mum. Aye, Mum.
Hold, I say, Mum. Else we lose the fox in our capers. Hold!
Oh, bless your heart for a sweet, pleasant, damn mischievous son of a whore.
Perfect in the table exercise I've been teaching you these 3 days. You all know your posts and your places and can show that you have been used to good company without ever stirring from home. Eh? Now, when company comes, you are not to pop out and stare and then run in again like frightened rabbits in a warren.
No.
You, Diggory, whom I've taken from the barn, are to make a show at the side table. And you, Roger, whom I've advanced from the plough, are to place yourself behind my chair. But you're not to stand so with your hands in your pockets. Oh, take your hands from your pockets, Roger.
Sir.
And from your head, you blockhead, you. See how Diggory carries his hands, eh? I mean, they're a little too stiff indeed, but that's no great matter.
I mind how I hold them. I learned to hold my hands this way when I was upon drill for the militia. And so, being upon drill...
You must not be so talkative, Diggory. You must be all attention to the guests. You must hear us talk and not think of talking. You must see us drink and not think of drinking. You must see us eat and not think of eating.
By the laws, your worship, that's perfectly impossible.
Huh?
Whenever Diggory sees eating going forward, he's always wishing for a mouth for himself.
Oh, blockhead. Is not a bellyful in the kitchen as good as a bellyful in the parlour? Stay your stomach with that reflection.
I thank your worship.
Right, now,
To stay my stomach with a slice of cold beef in the pantry.
Diggory, you are too talkative.
Then, if I happen to say a good thing or tell a good story at table, you must not all burst out a-laughing as if you made part of the company.
Then, God, your worship must not tell the story of the old grouse in the gun room. Oh. I cannot help laughing at that. Oh. For the soul of me, oh, we have laughed at that these 20 years.
Oh, yeah. No, that story is a good one. Well, honest Diggory, you may laugh at that. But still, remember to be attentive. Now, suppose one of the company should call for a glass of wine. How will you behave?
A glass of wine, sir, if you please.
Eh? Why don't you move?
Because, your worship, I never have courage till I see the eatables and drinkables brought upon table. And then I'm as bold as a lion.
What? Will nobody move?
I'm not to leave this place.
I'm sure it's no place of mine.
And no mine for certain.
And I'm sure it cannot be mine.
You numbskulls. And so while, like your betters, you are quarrelling for places, the guests must be starved. Oh, you dunces, I find I must begin all over again. But don't I hear horses in the yard? To your posts, you blockheads. I'll go and make ready and give me old friend's son a hearty welcome.
By heavens, my place has gone quite out of me head.
I know that my place is to be everywhere.
My place is to be nowhere at all. And so, let's go about my business.
Welcome, gentlemen. Very welcome.
Whoa, steady.
Sarah, I am George Hastings. And this is my friend Charles Marlowe. We look for the comforts of a clean room and a good fire.
Indeed, sir. All is prepared. Stanley, take these horses.
Right. Oh, upon my word, a very well-looking inn. Antique, creditable. Usual fate of a large mansion. Having first ruined the master by good housekeeping, it at last comes to levy contributions as an inn.
Brave sirs, step this way. Stanley here will attend to your horses.
Henry Allard, how were these drunk?
As you say, we passengers are to be taxed to pay all these fines. I've often seen a good signboard or a marble chimney piece. They're not actually put in the bill. Inflame the reckoning confoundedly.
Travellers, George, must pay in all places. The only difference is that in good inns you pay dearly for luxuries. In bad ones, you are fleeced and starved.
Now, sirs, I bid you welcome again.
Well, you have lived pretty much among them. In truth, I have often been surprised that you, who have seen so much of the world with your natural good sense and your many opportunities, could never yet acquire a requisite share of assurance.
The Englishman's malady.
And if you'd step this way, sir.
Aye, sir, in our own time.
But tell me, George, where could I have learned that assurance you talk of? My life has been spent chiefly in a college or an inn, in seclusion from the lovely part of the creation that chiefly teach men confidence. I don't know that I was ever familiarly acquainted with a single modest woman. Well, except my mother. But among females of another class, you know.
Aye, among them. You are impudent enough of all conscience.
They are of us, you know.
But in the company of women of reputation, I never saw such an idiot, such a trembler. You look for all the world as if you wanted an opportunity of stealing out of the room.
Why, man, that's because I do want to steal out of the room. Oh, faith, I have often formed the resolution to break the ice and rattle away at any rate, but I don't know how. A single glance from a pair of fine eyes has totally overset my resolution. An impudent fellow may counterfeit modesty, but I'll be hanged if a modest man can ever counterfeit impudence.
Where did you tell it, sir?
This is not my fault.
The fire's ablaze, and I've warmed the punch.
This landlord's desperate for custom. I might almost think we were expected.
We accept your hospitality, and we...
It is not for me to give. I am but Diggory.
Well, but Diggory, take us to the punch.
I'll take you to my master, and he will wait upon you.
If you could but
say, half the fine things to our ladies that I've heard you lavish upon the barmaid of an inn, or even a college bedmaker.
Why, George, I can't say fine things to them. They freeze, they petrify me. Well, they may talk of a comet or a burning mountain or some such bagatelle, but to me, a modest woman, dressed out in all her finery, is the most tremendous object of the whole creation.
Oh, at this rate, man, how can you ever expect to marry?
Never. Unless, as amongst kings and princes, my bride were to be courted by proxy. But if indeed, like an Eastern bridegroom, one were to be introduced to a wife he never saw before, it might be endured. But to go through all the terrors of a formal courtship, together with the episode of aunts, grandmothers, and cousins, and at last to blurt out the broad, staring question of, Madam, will you marry me? No, that's a strain much above me, I assure you. I pity you.
Keep coming, sir. Keep coming.
We follow, friend Diggory. But how do you intend behaving to the lady you'll come down to visit at the request of your father?
As I behave to all other ladies. Bow very low. Answer yes or no to all her demands. But as for the rest, I don't think I shall venture to look into her face until I see my father's again.
I'm surprised that one who is so warm a friend can be so cool a lover.
And now, sirs, we have come. Pray ease yourselves till I fetch the master.
No need hurry him, good Diggory. We shall entertain ourselves and enjoy the amenities of the house.
Sir, Your Honour, Sirs, Honourable Sirs, Honourable Honours.
Yes, out, old potwalloper, down with your comings, had better be gone.
To be explicit, my dear Hastings, my chief inducement in coming down here was to be instrumental in forwarding your happiness, not my own. Miss Neville loves you. The family don't know you. As my friend, you were sure of a reception, and let honour do the rest.
Oh, my dear Marlowe. But I'll suppress the emotion. Were I a wretch, meanly seeking to carry off a fortune, you should be the last man in the world I would apply to for assistance. But Miss Neville's person is all I ask, and that is mine, both from her deceased father's consent and her own inclination.
Oh, happy man. Mm-hmm. You have talents and art to captivate any woman. I'm doomed to adore the sex, and yet to converse with the only part of it I despise. With this stammer in my address, and this awkward, unprepossessing visage of mine can never permit me to soar above the reach of a milliner's prentice, or one of the duchesses of Drury Lane. This fellow here to interrupt us.
Gentlemen, once more, you are heartily welcome. Which is Mr. Marlowe?
Sir,
you're heartily welcome. It's not my way, you see, to receive my friends with my back to the fire. I like to give them a hearty reception in the old style. I like to see their horses and trunks taken care of.
We've got our names from the servants already. We approve your caution and hospitality, sir. I've been thinking, George, of changing our travelling dresses in the morning. I am grown confoundedly ashamed of mine.
I beg, Mr. Marlowe, you'll use no ceremony in this house.
I fancy, Charles, you're right. The first blow is half the battle. I intend opening the campaign with the white and gold.
Mr. Marlowe, Mr. Hastings, gentlemen, pray be under no constraint in this house. This is Liberty Hall, gentlemen. You may do just as you please here.
Yes, George, if we open the campaign too fiercely at first, we may want ammunition before it is over. Mm. I think to reserve the embroidery to secure a retreat.
Ah, you're talking of a retreat, Mr. Marlowe. It puts me in mind of the Duke of Marlborough when we went to besiege Denain. He first summoned the garrison.
Don't you think the ventre d'or waistcoat will do with the plain brown?
He first summoned the garrison, which might consist of about 5,000 men.
I think not. Brown and yellow mixed but very poorly.
Yeah. I say, gentlemen, as I was telling you, he summoned the garrison, which might consist of about 5,000 men.
But the girls like finery.
Which might consist of about 5,000 men, well appointed with stores, ammunition, and other implements of war. Now, says the Duke Duke of Marlborough to George Brooks that stood next to him. You must have heard of George Brooks. I'll pawn my dukedom, says he, but I take that garrison without spilling a drop of blood.
What, so my good fellow, if you gave us a glass of punch in the meantime, it would help us to carry on the siege with vigour.
Punch, sir? This is the most unaccountable kind of modesty I ever met with.
Yes, sir, punch. A glass of warm punch after our journey will be comfortable. This is Liberty Hall, you know.
Yeah. Here's Cook, sir.
Oh, so this fellow in his Liberty Hall will only let us have just what he pleases.
I hope you'll find it to your mind. I have prepared it with my own hands, and I believe your own. The ingredients are tolerable. Mm. Will you be so good as to pledge me, sir? Here, Mr. Marlowe, here is to our better acquaintance.
A very impudent fellow, this. But he's a character, and I'll humour him a little. Sir, my service to you.
I see this fellow wants to give us his company and forgets that he's an innkeeper before he's learned to be a gentleman.
From the evidence of your cup, my old friend, I suppose you have a good deal of business in this part of the country? Warm work, now and then, at elections, I suppose?
No, sir, I have long given that work over. Since our betters have hit upon the expedient of electing each other, there's no business for us that sell ale. Mm.
So then you have no turn for politics, I find?
Not in the least. There was a time, indeed, I fretted myself about the mistakes of government like other people, but finding myself every day grow more angry and the government growing no better, I left it to mend itself. Sir, my service to you.
Sir, what with eating above stairs and drinking below, with receiving your friends without and amusing them within, you lead a good, pleasant, bustling life of it.
I do stare about a great deal, that's certain. Half the differences of the parish are adjusted in this very parlour. Mm.
And you have an argument in your cup, old gentleman, better than any in the law courts of Westminster Hall.
Aye, young gentleman, that and a little philosophy.
Well, this is the first time I ever heard of an innkeeper's philosophy. So then, like an experienced general, you attack them on every quarter. If you find their reason manageable, you attack it with your philosophy. If you find they have no reason, you attack them with this. Here's your health, my philosophy.
Oh, good, very good. Thank you. Your generalship puts me in mind of Prince Eugenie. When he fought the Turks at the Battle of Belgrade, you shall hear.
Instead of the Battle of Belgrade, I believe it's almost time to talk about supper. Mm. What has your philosophy got in the house for supper?
For supper, sir?
Was ever such a request to a man in his own house?
Yes, sir. Supper, sir. I begin to feel an appetite. I shall make devilish work tonight in the larder, I promise you.
Such a brazen dog, sure never my eyes beheld.
Why, really, sir, as for supper, I can't. Well, tell my Dorothy and the cookmaid settle these things between them. I leave these kind of things entirely to them.
You do, do you?
Entirely. By the by, I believe they are in actual consultation upon what's for supper this moment in the kitchen.
Then I beg they'll admit me as one of their privy council. It's a way I've got. When I travel, I always choose to regulate my own supper. Let the cook be called. No offence, I hope.
No, sir. None in the least. Yet I don't know how. Our Bridget, the cookmaid, is not very communicative upon these occasions. Should we send for her? She might scold us all out of the house.
Let's see your list of the larder, then. I ask it as a favour. I always match my appetite to my bill of fare. Sir, he's very right. And it's my way, too.
Sir, you have a right to command here. Roger! Roger, bring us the bill of fare for tonight's supper. I believe it's drawn up.
Aye.
Your manner, Mr. Hastings, puts me in mind of my uncle, Colonel Wallop. It was a saying of his that no man was sure of his supper till he'd eaten it.
His uncle, a colonel, we shall soon hear of his mother being a justice of peace.
Roger, good. What the delicacies are to tempt us?
Let's have the bill of fare. What's here? For the first course? For the second course? For the dessert? Oh, the devil, sir! Do you think we brought down the whole joiner's company or the Corporation of Bedford to eat up such a supper? Two or three little things, clean and comfortable, will do.
Well, but let's hear it.
For the first course, at the top, a pig's face and prune sauce.
Damn your pig's face, I say.
Damn your prune sauce, sir.
And yet, gentlemen, to men that are hungry, a pig's face with prune sauce is very good eating.
In the bottom, a calf's tongue and brains.
Oh, let your brains be knocked out, my good sir. I don't like them.
Or you may clap them on a plate by themselves. I do.
Their impudence confounds me. Gentlemen... You are my guests. Make what alterations you please. Is there anything else you wish to retrench or alter, gentlemen?
A pork pie, a boiled rabbit and sausages, a Florentine, a shaking pudding, and a dish of Tiff Tuff Taffety cream.
Oh, confound your made dishes. I shall be awash with gaudy sauces. I'm for plain eating.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, that I have nothing you like, but if there be anything you have a particular fancy...
Why, really, sir, your bill of fare is so exquisite that any one part of it is full as good as another. Send us what you please. So much for supper.
Thank you, Roger.
Now to see that our beds are aired and properly taken care of.
I entreat you'll leave all that to me. You shall not stir a step.
Leave that to you? I protest, sir. You must excuse me. I always look to these things myself.
I must insist, sir. You'll make yourself easy on that head.
You see, I'm resolved on it.
Very troublesome fellow this, as ever I met with.
Well, sir, I'm resolved at least to attend you.
This may be modern modesty, but I never saw anything look so like old-fashioned impudence.
This way, please, sir. Roger, Diggory, light,
So I find this fellow's civilities begin to grow troublesome. Oh, but who can be angry at those assiduities which are meant to please him?
What do I see? Miss Neville, by all that's happy.
My dear Hastings, to what unexpected good fortune, to what accident am I to ascribe this happy meeting?
Oh, rather let me ask the same question, as I could never have hoped to meet my dearest Constance at an inn.
An inn? Sure you mistake. My aunt, my guardian, lives here. What could induce you to think this house an inn?
Oh, my friend Mr. Marlowe, with whom I came down, and I have been sent here as to an inn, I assure you. A young fellow whom we accidentally met at a house hard by directed us hither.
Certainly it must be one of my hopeful cousin's tricks, of whom you have heard me talk so often.
Oh, he whom your aunt intends for you. He of whom I have such just apprehensions.
You have nothing to fear from him, I assure you. Mm. You'd adore him if you knew how heartily he despises me. My aunt knows it too, and has undertaken to court me for him, and actually begins to think she has made a conquest.
Oh, thou dear dissembler. You must know, my Constance, I have just seized this happy opportunity of my friend's visit here to get admittance into the family. The horses that carried us down are now fatigued with their journey, but they'll soon be refreshed. And then, if my dearest girl will trust in her faithful Hastings, we shall soon be landed in France, where even among slaves the laws of marriage are respected.
I have often told you that though ready to obey you, I yet should leave my little fortune behind with reluctance. The greatest part of it was left me by my uncle, the India director, and chiefly consists in jewels. I have been for some time persuading my aunt to let me wear them. I fancy I'm very near succeeding. The instant they are put into my possession, you shall find me ready to make them and myself yours.
Oh, perish the baubles. Your person is all I desire. In the meantime, my friend Marlowe must not be led into his mistake. I know the strange reserve of his temper is such that if abruptly informed of it, he would instantly quit the house before our plan was ripe for execution.
But how shall we keep him in the deception? Miss Hardcastle is just returned from walking. What if we still continue to deceive him?
He's inspecting his chamber and will be here any minute. We must plan quickly.
The assiduities of these good people tease me beyond bearing.
My host seems to think it ill manners to leave me alone, and so he claps not only himself, but his old-fashioned wife on my back. They talk of coming to sup with us, too. And then I suppose we are to run the gauntlet through all the rest of the family. Oh-ho! What have we here?
Ah! My dear child, let me congratulate you, the most fortunate accident. Who do you think is just delighted?
I cannot guess.
Our mistresses, my boy, Miss Hardcastle and Miss Neville. Give me leave to introduce Miss Constance Neville to your acquaintance.
Mr. Marlowe.
Happening to dine in the neighbourhood, they called on their return to take fresh horses here. Miss Hardcastle has just stepped into the next room and will be back in an instant. Well, wasn't it lucky, eh?
I've just been mortified enough of all conscience, and here comes something to complete my embarrassment.
Well, but wasn't it the most fortunate thing in the world?
Very fortunate. Miss Neville, a most joyful encounter. But our dresses, George, you know, are in disorder. What if we should postpone the happiness till tomorrow? Tomorrow at her own house. It will be every bit as convenient and rather more respectful. Tomorrow let it be.
By no means, sir. Your ceremony will displease her. The disorder of your dress will show the ardour of your impatience.
Mm.
Besides, she knows you are in the house and will permit you to see her.
The devil, how shall I support it? Hastings, you must not go. You are to assist me, you know. I shall be confoundedly ridiculous.
Oh, sure, man. It's but the first plunge and all's over. She's but a woman, you know.
And of all women, she that I dread most to encounter. Yet, hang it. I'll take courage.
Are we not fortunate that Mr. Hastings and Mr. Marlowe are safely arrived?
Miss Hardcastle, Mr. Marlowe, I'm proud of bringing two persons of such merit together that only want to know to esteem each other.
Now for meeting my modest gentleman with a demure face and quite in his own manner. I'm glad of your safe arrival, sir. I'm told you had some accidents, by the way.
Only a few, madam. Yet we had some. Yes, madam, a good many accidents. But should be sorry, madam, or rather glad, of any accidents that are so agreeably concluded.
You never spoke better in your whole life. Keep it up, and I'll ensure you the victory.
I'm afraid you flatter, sir. You that have seen so much of the finest company can find little entertainment in an obscure corner of the country.
I have lived indeed in the world, madam, but I have kept very little company. I have been but an observer upon life, madam, while others were enjoying it.
But that, I am told, is the way to enjoy it at last.
Cicero never spoke better. Once more, and you're confirmed an assurance forever.
Hey, stand by me, then, and when I'm down, throw in a word or two to set me up again.
An observer? Like you, upon life, were, I fear, disagreeably employed, since you must have had much more to censure than to approve.
Pardon me, madam. I am always willing to be amused. The folly of most people is rather an object of mirth than uneasiness.
Bravo! Never spoke so well in your whole life. Well, Miss Hardcastle, I see that you and Mr. Marlowe are going to be very good company. I believe our being here will but embarrass the interview.
Not in the least, Mr. Hastings. We like your company of all things.
George, sure you won't go? How can you leave us? Our presence will but spoil conversation, so we'll retire to the next room.
You don't consider, man, that we're to manage a little tete-a-tete of our own.
Oh, Miss Neville, may I show you?
Mr. Marlowe, you have not been wholly an observer, I presume, sir. The ladies, I should hope, have employed some part of your addresses.
Pardon me, madam.
But then why take such pains to study and observe them?
As yet, I have studied only to deserve them.
And that, some say, is the worst way to obtain them.
Perhaps so, madam. But I love to converse only with the more grave and sensible part of the sex. But I'm afraid I grow tired.
Oh, no, not at all, sir. There is nothing I like so much as grave conversation myself. I could hear it forever. Mm-hmm. Indeed, I have often been surprised how a man of sentiment could ever admire those light, airy pleasures where nothing reaches the heart.
It's,
a disease of the mind, madam. In the variety of tastes, there must be some who are wanting a relish for,
I understand you, sir. There must be some who, wanting a relish for refined pleasures, pretend to despise what they are incapable of tasting.
My meaning, madam, but infinitely better expressed. And I can't help observing,
Who could ever suppose this fellow impudent upon some occasions?
You were going to observe, sir?
I was observing, madam, I protest, madam, I forget what I was going to observe.
I vow, and so do I.
You were observing, sir, that in this age of hypocrisy, something about hypocrisy, sir?
Hypocrisy? Yes, madam. In this age of hypocrisy, there are few who upon strict inquiry, do not,
I understand you perfectly, sir.
Egad, and that's more than I do myself.
You mean that in this hypocritical age, there are few that do not condemn in public what they practice in private, and think they pay every debt to virtue when they praise it.
True, madam. Those who have most virtue in their mouths have least of it in their bosoms. But I'm sure I tire you, madam.
No, not in the least, sir. There's something so agreeable and spirited in your manner. Such life and force. Pray you, sir, go on.
Yes, madam. I was saying, that there are some occasions when a total want of courage, madam, destroys all the... and puts us
I agree with you entirely. A want of courage upon some occasions assumes the appearance of ignorance and betrays us when we most want to excel. I beg you'll proceed.
Yes, madam. Morally speaking, madam. But I see Miss Neville expecting us in the next room. I would not intrude for the world.
I protest, sir. I was never more agreeably entertained in all my life. Pray, go on.
Yes, madam. I was... but she beckons us to join her. Madam, shall I do myself the honour to attend you?
Well, then, I'll follow.
This pretty smooth dialogue has done for me. Hastings! Hastings!
Hastings! Was there ever such a sober, sentimental interview? Oh, I'm certain he scarce looked in my face the whole time. Yet the fellow... but for his unaccountable bashfulness, is pretty well, too. He has good sense, but then so buried in his fears that it fatigues one more than ignorant. Oh, if I could teach him a little confidence, it would be doing somebody that I know of a piece of service. But who is that somebody? That, Faith, is the question I scarce can answer.
I hear Marlowe approaching.
How speedily he has courted my cousin.
He has gawped and gaped, stuttered and misused the time that we have not.
Hastings, I say!
Quickly, step into the orangery before we are discovered.
Why, Mistress Minx... I see that you have lost none of your colour.
Nor you the ardour of affection. But we must make haste, for my aunt checks all the nooks and crannies to chase out lazy servants.
I will straightaway seek out your gruesome aunt, and with some flattering words woo her. I will so ingratiate myself that any suspicion she may harbour will be distracted in talk of fripperies and fancy foolish fashions.
Meanwhile, I will turn my attentions to my odious cousin. I shall torture him with such poodle faking that my kisses shall seem like needles.
Holy God!
He, poor sot, will engage me with reprisals that my poor Aunt Dorothy shall mistake for lover's bite.
Oh, and so sweet, Constance. Before the candles turn, I will arrange the horses that shall carry us away.
Hastings! For the love of God, Hastings, where are you?
Dang me, Marley stumbled in here.
Quickly, I take my leave. I must find my young squire goat and fondle his musky whiskers.
Me poor cousin Tom. I wonder you're not ashamed of it. So very engaged.
No, I hope cousin one may speak to one's own relations and not be to blame.
Aye, but I know what sort of relation you want to make me, though, but it won't do. Oh. I tell you, cousin Tom, it won't do. So I beg you'll keep your distance. I want no nearer relationship. And stop you tickling my ears.
Oh, love, sir, I do believe you enjoy it.
No, you minx. Keep up where you draw.
Now, Tony, don't tease me so. Hastings, you are very entertaining. There's nothing in the world I love to talk of so much as London and the fashions. Oh, though I was never there myself.
Never there? You amaze me. From your air and manner, I concluded you've been bred all your life either at Ranelagh, St. James's, or Tower Wharf.
Oh, sir, you're only pleased to say so. We country persons can have no fashionable airs at all. I'm in love with the town, and that serves to raise me above some of our neighbouring rustics. But who can have a manor that has never seen the Pantheon, the Grotto Gardens, the Borough, and such places where the nobility chiefly resort? All I can do is to enjoy London at second hand. I take care to know every tête-à-tête from the Scandalous magazine, yes, and have all the fashions as they come out in a letter from the two Miss Ricketts of Crooked Lane. Pray, how do you like this coiffure, Mr. Hastings?
Extremely elegant and dégagé, upon my word, madam. Your friseur is a Frenchman, I suppose?
I protest I dressed it myself from a print in the ladies' memorandum book for the last year.
Indeed. Such a head in a side box at the playhouse would draw as many gazers as my lady mayoress at a city ball.
I vow, since inoculation began, there is no such thing to be seen as a plain woman. So one must dress a little particular, or one may escape in the crowd.
But that can never be your case, madam, in any dress.
Yet what signifies my dressing when I have such a piece of antiquity by my side as Mr. Hardcastle? All I can say will never argue down a single button from his clothes. I've often wanted him to throw off his great flaxen wig and, where he was bald, to plaster it over, like my Lord Pateley, with powder.
You're right, madam. For as among the ladies there are none ugly, so among the men there are none old.
But what do you think his answer was? Why, with his usual gothic vivacity, he said I only wanted him to throw up his wig to convert it into a tate for my own wearing.
Intolerable. But your age, you may wear what you please, and it must become you.
Pray, Mr. Hastings, what do you take to be the most fashionable age about town?
Some time ago, 40 was all the mode.
Oh.
But I'm told the ladies intend to bring up 50 for the ensuing winter.
Seriously? Oh, then I shall be too young for the fashion.
No lady begins now to put on jewels till she's past 40. For instance, Miss there, in a polite circle, would be considered as a child, as a mere maker of samples.
And yet my niece thinks herself as much a woman and is as fond of jewels as the oldest of us all.
Oh, your niece, is she? And the young gentleman, a brother of yours, I should presume?
Oh,
My sons, sir. They are contracted to each other. Observe their little sports. They fall in and out 10 times a day as if they were man and wife already. Oh, tell me, child, what soft things are you saying to your cousin Constance this evening?
I have been saying no soft things. But that it's very hard to be followed about, so be calm. I've not a place in the house now that's left to myself but the stable.
Oh, never mind him, Con, my dear. He tells another story behind your back.
Oh, but there's something generous in my cousin's manner. He falls out before faces to be forgiven in private.
That's a damn confounded crack.
Oh, he's a sly one. Don't you think they like each other about the mouth, Mr. Hastings? Mm. Oh, the Blenkinsop mouth to a T. They're oversized, too. Back to back, my pretties. Oh, Mr. Hastings, missy, you come to Tony.
Why does good not make me, I tell you?
Oh, blood! Oh, you've almost cracked my head.
Oh, the monster, for shame, Tony. You a man and behave so.
There now, what a pretty pair of bookends.
If I'm a man, let me have my fortune. God, I'll not be made a fool of no longer.
Oh, is this ungrateful boy all the time to get for the pains I have taken in your education?
What?
I that have rocked you in your cradle and fed that pretty mouth with a spoon. Did not I work that waistcoat to make you genteel?
Did not I
prescribe for you every day and weep while the remedy was operating?
Hey, God, you had reason to weep, for you've been dosing me ever since I was born.
Oh.
I've gone through every receipt in the complete hussif 10 times over, and you have thoughts of coursing me through Quincy next spring. But, ecod, I tell you, I'll not be made a fool of no longer.
Wasn't it all for your good, Viper? Wasn't it all for your good?
I wish you'd let me and my good alone, then. Snubbing this way when I'm in spirit. If I'm to have any good, let it come of itself. Not to keep digging it into oneself.
That's false. I never see you when you're in spirits. No, Tony, you then go to the alehouse or kennel. I'm never to be delighted with your agreeable wild notes. Unfailing monster!
Hey, come, Mama, your own notes are the wildest of the two.
Was ever the like. But I see he wants to break my heart. I see he does.
Dear madam, permit me to lecture the young gentleman a little. I'm certain I can persuade him to his duty.
Well, I must retire. Come, Constance, my love. You see, Mr. Hastings, the wretchedness of my situation. Mm. Oh, was ever poor woman so plagued with a dear, sweet, pretty, provoking, beautiful boy?
There was a young man riding by, and fame was at his will. Ran-do-do-diddle-o-dee. Don't mind her. Let her cry. It's the comfort of her heart. I've seen her and sister cry over a book for an hour together, and they said they liked the book the better, the more it made them cry.
Then you're no friend to the ladies, I find, my pretty young gentleman.
That's as I find them.
Not to her of your mother's choosing, I dare answer. And yet she appears to me a pretty, well-tempered girl.
That's because you don't know her as well as I. Ecod! I know every inch about her, and there's not a more bitter, cantankerous toad in all Christendom.
Pretty encouragement, this, for a lover.
I've seen her since the height of that. She has as many tricks as a hare in a thicket, or a colt the first day's breaking.
To me, she appears sensible and silent.
Aye, before company. But when she's with her playmates, she's as loud as hog in a gate.
But there is a meek modesty about her that charms me.
Yes, but curb her never so little. She kicks up and you're flung in a ditch.
Yes. But you must allow her a little beauty, yes. You must allow her some beauty.
Trollop. She's all a made-up thing, man. Whoa. Could you but see Bet Bouncer of these parts, you might then talk of beauty. Ecod, she has two... eyes as black as sloes and cheeks as broad and red as a pulpit cushion, she'd make two of she.
Well, what say you to a friend that would take this bitter bargain off your hands?
Anon.
Would you thank him that would take Miss Neville and leave you to happiness and your dear Miss Bouncer?
Aye, but where is there such a friend, for who would take her?
I am he.
Oh!
If you but assist me, I'll engage to whip her off to France, and you shall never hear more of her.
Assist you? Ecod, I will to the last drop of my blood. I'll clap a pair of horses to our chase that shall trundle you off in a twinkling and maybe get you a part of her fortune beside in jewels that you little dream of.
Oh, my dear squire, this looks like a lad of spirit.
Come along, then, and you shall see more of my spirit before you have done with me. Oh, we are the boys that fears no noise where the thundering cannons roar. What could my old friend Sir Charles mean by recommending his son as the modestest young man in town? To me, he appears the most impudent piece of brass that ever spoke with a tongue. He has taken possession of the easy chair by the fireside already. He took off his boots in the parlour and desired me, to see them taken care of. I'm desirous to know how his impudence affects my daughter. She will certainly be shocked at it. Ah, well, my Kate, I see you've changed your dress as I bid you. And yet I believe there was no great occasion.
I find such a pleasure, sir, in obeying your commands that I take care to observe them without ever debating their propriety.
And yet, Kate, I sometimes give you some cause, particularly when I recommended my modest gentleman to you as a lover today.
You taught me to expect something extraordinary, and I find the original exceeds the description.
I was never so surprised in my life. He has quite confounded all my faculties.
I never saw anything like it. And a man of the world, too.
Aye, he learned it all abroad. What a fool was I to think a young man could learn modesty by travelling. He might as soon learn wit at a masquerade.
It seems all natural to him.
A good deal assisted by bad company and a French dancing master.
Sure, you mistake, Papa. A French dancing master could never have taught him that timid look, that awkward address, that bashful manner.
Whose look? Whose manner, child?
Mr. Marlowe's. His mauvaison. His gauche manner. His timidity struck me at the first sight.
Then your first sight deceived you, but I think him one of the most brazen first sights that ever astonish my senses.
Sure, sir, you rally. I never saw anyone so modest.
And can you be serious? I never saw such a bouncing, swaggering puppy since I was born.
Surprising. He met me with a respectful bow, a stammering voice, and a look fixed on the ground.
He met me with a loud voice, a lordly air, and a familiarity that froze me to death.
Well, he treated me with diffidence and respect, censured the manners of the age, admired the prudence of girls that never laughed, tired me with apologies for being tiresome, then left the room with a bow, and, madam, I would not for the world detain you.
He spoke to me as if he knew me all his life before, asked 20 questions and never waited for an answer, interrupted my best remarks with some silly pun, and when I was in my best story of the Duke of Marlborough and Prince Eugenie, he asked if I had not had a good hand at making punch. Yes, Kate, he asked your father if he was a maker of punch.
Well... One of us must certainly be mistaken.
If he be what he has shown himself, I am determined he shall never have my consent.
And if he be the sullen thing I take him, he shall never have mine.
In one thing, then, we are agreed, to reject him.
Yes, but upon conditions. For if you should find him less impudent and I more presuming, if you find him more respectful and I more importunate, I don't know. Fellow is well enough for a man. Certainly we don't meet many such at a horse race in the country.
If we should find him so, but that's impossible. The first appearance has done my business. I'm seldom deceived in that.
And yet there may be many good qualities under that first appearance.
Aye, when a girl finds a fellow's outside to her taste, she then sets about guessing the
rest of his furniture. With her smooth face stands for good sense and a genteel figure for every other virtue.
I hope, sir, a conversation begun with a compliment to my good sense won't end with a sneer at my understanding.
Pardon me, Kate, but if young Mr. Brazen can find the art of reconciling contradictions, he may please us both, perhaps.
And as one of us must be mistaken, what if we go to make further discoveries?
Agreed. But depend on it, I'm in the right.
And depend on it, I'm not much in the wrong.
God, I've got them. Here they are. My cousin Cobb's necklaces, earrings and all. My mother shan't cheat the poor souls out of their fortune neither.
My dear friend, how have you managed with your mother?
I hope you've amused her with pretending love for your cousin and that you're willing to be reconciled at last. Our horses will be refreshed in a short time and we shall soon be ready to set off.
And here's something to bear your charges, by the way. Your sweetheart's jewels. Keep them, and hang those, I say, that would rob you of one of them.
But how have you procured them from your mother?
Ask me no questions, and I'll tell you no fibs. I procured them by the rule of thumb. If I had not a key to every drawer in my mother's bureau, how could I go to the alehouse so often as I do? An honest man may rob himself of his own at any time.
Yes, but to be plain with you, Miss Neville is endeavouring to procure them from her aunt this very instant. If she succeeds, it will be the most delicate way, at least, of obtaining them.
Well, keep them till you know how it will be. But I know how it will be well enough. She'd as soon part with the only sound tooth in her head.
But I dread the effects of her resentment when she finds she's lost them.
Never you mind her resentment. Leave me to manage that. I don't value her resentment the bounce of a cracker. Suits. Here they are. Quickly, prance. Yeah?
Such a girl as you want jewels. It would be time enough for jewels, my dear, 20 years hence, when your beauty begins to want repairs.
But what will repair beauty at 40 will certainly improve it at 20, madam.
Yours, my dear, can admit of none. That natural blush is beyond 1,000 ornaments. Besides, sir, jewels are quite out at present. Don't you see half the ladies of our acquaintance, my Lady Kildaylight and Mrs. Crump and the rest of them, carry their jewels to town and bring back nothing but paste and marquesee.
But who knows, madam, but somebody that shall be nameless would like me impressed with all my little finery about me.
Consult your glass, my dear, and then see if with such a pair of eyes you want any better sparklers. What do you think, Tony, my dear? Does your cousin Con want any jewels in your eyes to set off her beauty?
That's as thereafter may be.
My dear aunt, if you knew how it would oblige me.
A period of old-fashioned rolls and table-cut things. They would make you look like the court of King Solomon at a puppet show. Besides, I believe I can't readily come at them. They may be missing for aught I know to the contrary.
What?
Then why don't you tell her so at once, as she's so longing for them? Tell her they're lost. It's the only way to quiet her. Say they're lost and call me to bear witness.
You know, my dear, I'm only keeping them for you. So if I say they're gone, you'll bear me witness, will you?
Never fear me. God, I'll say I saw them taken out with my own eyes.
I desire them but for a day, madam. Just to be permitted to show them as mementos, and then they may be locked up again.
To be plain with you, my dear Constance, if I could find them, you should have them. They're missing, I assure you. Lost, for aught I know. But we must have patience, wherever they are.
I'll not believe it. This is but a shallow pretense to deny me. I know they're too valuable to be so slightly kept, and as you are to answer for the loss.
Don't be alarmed, Constance. If they be lost, I must restore an equivalent. But my son knows they are missing and not to be found. Hmm? Hmm? Hmm?
Yet they are missing and not to be found. That I can bear witness to. I'll take my oath on't.
No! You must learn resignation, my dear, for though we lose our fortune, yet we should not lose our patience. See me, how calm I am.
Aye, people are generally calm at the misfortunes of others.
Now, I wonder a girl of your good sense should waste a thought upon such trumpery. We shall soon find them, and in the meantime you shall make use of my garnets till your jewels be found.
I detest garnets!
The most becoming things in the world to set up a clear complexion. You have often seen how well they look upon me.
Now you shall have them. Oh, I dislike them of all things! Was ever anything so provoking to mislay my own jewels and force me to wear her trumpery?
Yours? Don't be a fool. If she gives you the garnets, take what you can get. The jewels are your own already. I've stolen them out of her bureau and she does not know it. Fly to your spark. He'll tell you more of the matter. Leave me to manage her.
My dear cousin.
And spits about like a cavalry wheel.
Confusion! Robert! Yeggmen!
Yeggmen?
We are cheated, plundered, broke up, undone!
What's the matter? What's the matter, Mama? I hope nothing has happened to any of the good family.
We are filched! My bureau has been opened, the jewels taken, and I'm ravished.
Oh, is that all? Oh, by the laws, I never saw it better acted in my life. Ecod, I thought you was ruined in earnest.
My boy, I am ruined in earnest. My bureau has been broke open and all taken away.
Stick to that, eh? Stick to that. I'll bear witness, you know. Call me to bear witness.
I tell you, Tony, by all that's precious, the jewels are gone, and I shall be ruined forever.
Sure, I know they're gone, and I am to say
my
so.
My dearest Tony, but hear me. They are gone, I say.
By the laws, Mama, you met me for to laugh. Oh. I know who took them well enough, eh?
Was there ever such a blockhead that can't tell the difference between jest and earnest? I tell you, I'm not in jest, booby.
That's right, that's right. You must be in a bitter passion, and then nobody will suspect either of us. Oh. I'll bear witness that they are gone.
Was there ever such a cross-grained brute that won't hear me? Can you bear witness that you know better than a fool? Oh, was ever poor woman so beset with clod poles on one hand and thieves on the other?
I can bear witness to that.
Bear witness again, you blockhead, you, and I'll turn you out of the room directly. Oh, my poor niece! What will become of her? Do you laugh? You unfeeling brute, as if you enjoyed my distress.
I can bear witness to that.
Do you insult me, monster? I'll teach you to bet your mother I will.
I can bear witness to that.
My brain!
Brother of mine, to send them to the house as an inn. I
I don't wonder at his impudence.
Oh, what's more, madam, the young gentleman, as he passed by in your present dress, asked me if you were the barmaid. He mistook you for the barmaid, madam.
Then as I live, I'm resolved to keep up the delusion. Tell me, Pimple, how do you like my present dress? Don't you think I look something like Bet Bounce at the Three Pigeons?
Oh, madam, I think you've more to recommend her than Bet.
For she does need to hoist herself up and pull herself down. Oh. And she do pout and prattle with great sauciness.
Indeed. And are you sure he does not remember my face or person?
Certain of it. And foul, I thought so. For though we spoke for some time together, yet his fears were such that he never once looked at my face during the interview. Indeed, if he had, my bonnet would have kept him from seeing me.
But what do you want from keeping him in his mystery?
In the first place, I shall be seen. And that is no small advantage to a girl who brings her face to market. Then I shall perhaps make an acquaintance. And that's no small victory gained over one who never addresses any but the wildest of her sex. But my chief aim is to take my gentleman off his guard and, like an invisible champion of romance, examine all his aspects before I offer to combat.
But are you sure you can act your part and disguise your voice so that he may mistake that as he has already mistaken your person?
Never fear me. I think I've got the true barcant.
Did your honour call? Attend the master there. Pipes and tobacco for the company. Oh, the spit has been outrageous this half hour.
Do, madam.
Hold on.
Oh, dear.
What a boring every part of the house. I have scarce a moment's repose. If I go to the best room, there I find my host and his story. If I fly to the gallery, there we have my hostess with her curtsy down to the ground. But here in the orangery, I have at last got a moment to myself for recollection.
Did you call, sir? Did you run a call?
As for Miss Hardcastle, she's too grave and sentimental for me.
Did your honour?
No, child. Besides, from the glimpse I had of her, I think she squints.
I'm sure, sir, I heard the bell ring.
No, no. I have pleased my father, however, by coming down. Now tomorrow please myself by returning. Ah, me.
Perhaps the other gentleman calls, sir.
I tell you, no.
I should be glad to know, sir. We have such a parcel of servants.
No, no, I tell you. Yes, child, I think I did call. Oh, I vow, child, you are vastly handsome.
Oh, love, sir. You'll make one ashamed.
Never saw a more sprightly, mischievous eye. Yes, my dear, yes, I did call. Have you got any of your, what you call it in the house? Eh?
No, sir. We've been out of that these 10 days.
Oh, one may call in this house, I find, to very little purpose. Suppose I should call for a taste, just by way of trial, of the nectar of your lips. Oh. Perhaps I might be disappointed of that, too.
Nectar? Nectar, that's a liquor there's no call for in these parts. It's French, I suppose. We keep no French wines here, sir.
Oh, true English growth, I assure you.
Then it's odd I should not know it. We brew all sorts of wines in this house, and I have lived here these 18 years.
18 years? Why? One would think, child, you kept the bar before you were born.
Oh.
How old are you?
Oh, sir, I must not tell my age. They say women and music should never be dated.
To guess at this distance, you can't be much above 40.
Sir.
Yet nearer, I don't think so much. By coming close to some women, they look younger still. But when we come very close indeed...
Oh, pray, sir, keep your distance. One would think you wanted to know one's age as they do horses, by mark of mouth.
Oh, I protest, child, you use me extremely ill. If you keep me at this distance, how is it possible you and I can ever be acquainted?
And who wants to be acquainted with you? I want no such acquaintance, must I? I'm sure you did not treat Miss Hardcastle that was here a while ago in this obstropolous manner. I'll warrant me, before her, you looked dashed and kept bowing to the ground and talked for all of the world as if you was before a justice of peace.
Egad, she's hit it sure enough.
In awe of her child? A mere awkward, squinting thing? No, no, I find you don't know me. Well, I laughed and rallied her a little, but I was unwilling to be too severe. No, no, I could not be too severe. Curse me.
Oh, then, sir, you are a favourite, I find, among the ladies.
Oh, yes, my dear, a great favourite. Oh. And yet... Hang me, I don't see what they find in me to follow. At the ladies' club in town, I'm called their agreeable rattle.
Oh.
A rattle child is not my real name, but one I'm known by. And my name is Solomons. Oh. Mr. Solomons, my dear. At your service.
Oh, sir. You were introducing me to your club, not to yourself. And you're so great a favourite there, you say.
Oh, yes, my dear. Well, there's Mrs. Mantrap, Lady Betty Blacking, the Countess of Sligo, Mrs. Longhorns, old Miss Biddy Buckskin, and your humble servant. Keep up the spirit of the place.
Then it's a very merry place, I suppose.
Yes, as merry as cards, suppers, wine, and old women can make us.
And their agreeable rattle.
Egad, I don't quite like this chit. She looks knowing, me thinks. You laugh, child?
Oh, I can't but laugh to think what time they all have for minding their work or their family.
All's well, she don't laugh at me. Do you ever work, child?
Aye, sure. There's not a screen or a quilt in the whole house but can witness to that.
Odd so. Then you must show me your embroidery. I embroider and draw patterns myself a little. If you want a judge of your work, you must apply to me.
Oh! Sir, but the collars don't look well by candlelight. You shall see all in the morning.
Oh, why not now, my angel? Such beauty far as beyond the power of resistance.
Oh,
the landlord here. My old luck. Time to quit the field. Until later, my lovely.
Madam. So I find this is your modest lover. This is your humble admirer that kept his eyes fixed on the ground and only adored at humble distance. Kate, Kate, art thou not ashamed to deceive thy father so?
Never trust me, dear papa, but he's still the modest man I first took him for. You'll be convinced of it as well as I.
By the hand of my body, I believe his impudence is infectious. Didn't I see him seize your hand? Didn't I see him haul you about like a milkmaid? And now you talk of his respect and his modesty for self.
But if I shortly convince you of his modesty, that he has only the faults that will pass off with time, and the virtues that will improve with age, I hope you'll forgive him.
Yeah. The girl would actually make me run mad. I tell you, I'll not be convinced. I am convinced! He has scarcely been 3 hours in the house, and he has already encroached on all my prerogatives. You may like his impudence and call it modesty, but my son-in-law, madam, must have very different qualifications.
Sir, I ask for this night to convince you.
You shall not have half the time, for I have thoughts of turning him out this very hour.
Well, give me that hour, then, and I hope to satisfy you.
Well, an hour let it be, then, but I'll have no trifling with your father. All fair and open, do you mind me?
I hope, sir, you have ever found that I considered your commands as my pride. For your kindness is such that as yet my duty has been inclination.
No.
Marlowe expected here this night?
Yes.
Where have you had your information?
You may depend upon it. I just saw his letter to Mr. Hardcastle, in which he tells him he intends setting out a few hours after his son.
Then, my Constance, all must be completed before he arrives. He knows me, and should he find me here, would discover my name and perhaps my designs to the rest of the family.
The jewels, I hope, are safe.
Yes, yes. I have sent them to Marlowe, who keeps the keys of our baggage, and if I should not see him again, will write him further directions. In the meantime, I'll go to prepare matters for our elopement. I've had Master Lumpkin's promise of a carriage. Oh. Adieu.
Success attend you. In the meantime,
I'll go amuse my aunt with the old pretense of a violent passion for my cousin.
I wonder what Hastings could mean by sending me so valuable a thing as a casket to keep for him, when he knows the only place I have is the seat of my horse. Have you deposited the casket with the landlady, as I ordered you? Have you put it into her own hands, Jeremy?
Oh, yes, Your Honour.
She said she'd keep it safe, did she?
Oh, yeah. She says she'd keep it safe enough. She asked me how I came by it. And she said she had a great mind to make me give an account of myself.
Go now and unpack my boxes.
Yes, sir.
They're safe, however. What an unaccountable set of beings have we got amongst. This little barmaid, though, runs in my head most strangely and drives out the absurdities of all the rest of the family. Oh, she's mine. She must be mine, or I'm greatly mistaken.
Bless me. I quite forgot to tell her that I intended to prepare at the bottom of the garden.
Oh, Marlowe here. And in spirits, too.
Oh, give me joy, George. Crown me, shadow me with laurels.
Well, George, after all, we modest fellows don't want for success among the women.
Some women, you mean. But what success has your honour's modesty been crowned with now that it grows so insolent upon us?
Didn't you see the tempting, brisk, lovely little thing that runs about the house with a bunch of keys to its girdle?
Well, and what then?
She's mine, you rogue, you. Oh, such fire, such motion, such eyes, such lips. Oh, but egad, she would not let me kiss them, though.
But are you so sure, so very sure of her?
Why, man, she talked of showing me her work above stairs, and I am to improve the pattern?
Oh, how can you, Charles, go about to rob a woman of her honour?
Oh, we all know the honour of the barmaid of an inn. No, I don't intend to rob her, take my word for it. There's nothing in this house I shan't honestly pay for.
I believe the girl has virtue.
And if she has, I should be the last man in the world that would attempt to corrupt it.
You have taken care, I hope, of the casket I sent you to lock up. It's in safety.
Yes, yes, it's safe enough. I have taken care of it, though I was taxed to find a safe reception for it. Numbskull, I've taken better precautions for you than you did for yourself. I have what? I have sent it to the landlady to keep you.
To the landlady?
The landlady.
You did?
I did. She's to be answerable for its forthcoming, you know.
Yes, she'll bring it forth with a vengeance.
But wasn't I right? I believe you'll allow that I acted prudently upon this occasion.
You must not see my uneasiness.
You seem a little disconcerted, though, methinks. Sure nothing has happened?
No, nothing. Never was in better spirits in all my life. And so you left it with the landlady, who no doubt very readily undertook the charge.
Rather too readily, for she not only kept the casket, but through her great precaution was going to keep the messenger too.
Yes. They're safe, however.
As a guinea in a miser's purse.
So now all hopes of fortune are at an end, and we must set off without it. Well, Charles, I'll leave you to your meditations on the pretty barmaid, and ha, 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 may you be as successful for yourself as you have been for me.
Thank you, George. I ask no more.
I no longer know my own house. It's turned all topsy-turvy. His servants have got drunk already. Oh, I'll bear it no longer. And yet, for my respect for his father, I'll be calm. Ah, Mr. Marlowe, your servant. I'm your very humble servant.
Sir, your humble servant. What's to be the wonder now?
I believe, sir, you must be sensible, sir, that no man alive ought to be more welcome than your father's son, sir. I hope you think so.
Oh, I do, from my soul, sir. I don't want much entreaty. I generally make my father's son welcome wherever he goes.
I believe you do, from my soul, sir. But though I say nothing to your own conduct, that of your servants is insufferable. Their manner of drinking is setting a very bad example in this house, I assure you.
Test, my very good sir, that's no fault of mine. Oh. If they don't drink as they ought, they are to blame. I ordered them not to spare the cellar. I did, I assure you. Here, let one of my servants come up.
Jeremy!
My positive directions were that as I did not drink myself, they should make up for my deficiencies below.
Then they had your orders for what they do. I'm satisfied.
Oh, they had, I assure you. You shall hear from one of them themselves. Are you, Jeremy? Come forward, sir. What were my orders? Were you not told to drink freely and call for what you thought fit for the good of the house?
I begin to lose my patience.
Please, Your Honour. Liberty Hall forever, I say. Now, I'm but a servant. I'm as good as another man. Now, I'll drink for no man before supper, sir. Damn it. Good liquor will sit upon a good supper, but a good supper will not sit upon... Oh, upon my conscience, sir.
See, my old friend, the fellow is as drunk as he can possibly be. I don't know what you'd have more, unless you'd have the poor devil immersed in a beer barrel.
Zounds, he'll drive me distracted if I contain myself any longer.
Mr. Marlowe, sir, I have submitted to your insolence for more than 4 hours, and I see no likelihood of its coming to an end. I am now resolved to be master here, sir, and I desire that you and your drunken pack may leave my house. Directly.
Leave your house? I'm sure you jest, my good friend. What, when I'm doing what I can to please you?
I tell you, sir, you don't please me, so I desire you leave my house.
I'm sure you cannot be serious. But this time of night and such a night, you only mean to banter me.
I tell you, sir, I'm serious. I know that my passions are roused. I say this house is mine, sir. This house is mine, and I command you to leave it directly.
It's a puddle in a storm. I shan't stir a step, I assure you. Well, this your house, fellow? It's my house. This is my house. Mine while I choose to stay. What right have you to bid me leave this house, sir? I never met with such impudence, curse me. Never in my whole life before.
Nor I, confound me, if ever I did. To come to my house, to call for what he likes, to turn me out of mine own chair, to order his servants to get drunk, and then to tell me this house is mine, sir, by all that's impudent, it makes me laugh. Ha, ha, ha. Pray, sir, as you take the house, what think you of taking the rest of the furniture? What? I mean, look, there's a pair of silver candlesticks. And there's a fire screen, and here's a pair of brazen nose bellows. Perhaps you may take a fancy to them, eh?
Bring me your bill, sir. Bring me your bill, and let's make no more words about it.
And there are a set of prints, too. And what think you of the rake's progress for your own apartment?
Bring me your bill, I say, and I'll leave you and your infernal house directly.
Then there's a mahogany table that you may see your own face in.
My bill, I say...
I have forgot the great chair for your own particular slumbers after a hearty meal.
Zounds, bring me my bill, I say, and let's hear no more.
Young man, from your father's letter to me, I was taught to expect a well-bred, modest man as a visitor here. Yeah, but now I find him no better than a coxcomb and a bully. But he will be down here presently and shall hear more of it. I shall tell him of his son's impudence. A brazen-faced jackanape!
How's this? Sure, I have not mistaken the house. Everything looks like an inn. The servants cry coming. The attendance is awkward. The barmaid, too, to attend us. But she's here and will further inform me. Whither so fast, child? A word with you.
Let it be short, then. I'm in a hurry.
I believe he begins to find out his mistake, but it's too soon quite to undeceive him.
Pray, child, answer me one question. What are you, and what may your business in this house be?
A relation of the family, sir.
What, a poor relation?
Yes, sir. A poor relation appointed to keep the keys, and to see that the guests want nothing in my power to give them.
That is, you act as the barmaid of this inn.
Inn? Oh, Lord! What brought that in your head? One of the finest families in the county keeping inn. Oh, Mr. Hardcastle's house and inn.
Mr. Hardcastle's house? Is this Mr. Hardcastle's house, child?
Aye, sure. Whose else should it be?
So then all's out, and I have been damnably imposed on. Oh, confound my stupid head. I shall be laughed at over the whole town. I shall be stuck up in caricature in all the print shops. The Dolissimo Macaroni. To mistake this house of all others for an inn, and my father's old friend for an innkeeper. Oh, what a swaggering puppy must he take me for? What a silly puppy do I find myself? Well, there again, may I be hanged, my dear, but I mistook you for the barmaid.
Oh, dear me, dear me. I'm sure there's nothing in my behaviour to put me upon a level with one of that stamp.
Nothing, my dear, nothing. But I was in for a list of blunders. Could not help making you a subscriber. My stupidity saw everything the wrong way. I mistook your assiduity for assurance and your simplicity for allurement. But it's over. This house I no more show my face in.
I hope, sir, I have done nothing to disoblige you. I'm sure I should be sorry to affront any gentleman who has been so polite and said so many civil things to me. I'm sure I should be sorry if he left the family upon my account. I'm sure I should be sorry people said anything amiss, since I have no fortune but by my character.
By heaven, she weeps. This is the first mark of tenderness I ever had from a modest woman. And it touches me. Excuse me, my lovely girl. You are the only part of the family I leave with reluctance. But to be plain with you, the difference of our birth, fortune, and education make an honorable connection impossible. And I can never harbor a thought of seducing simplicity that trusted in my honor, or bringing ruin upon one whose only fault was being too lovely.
Generous man. I now begin to admire him. But I'm sure my family is as good as Miss Hardcastle's. And though I'm poor, that's no great misfortune to a contented mind. And until this moment, I never thought it was bad to want fortune.
Why now, my pretty simplicity?
Because it puts me at a distance from one that if I had £1,000, I would give it all to.
Simplicity bewitches me. So that if I stay, I'm undone. I must make one bold effort and leave her. Your partiality in my favor, my dear, touches me most sensibly. And were I to live for myself alone, I could easily fix my choice. But I owe too much to the opinion of the world, too much to the authority of a father, so that I can scarcely speak it. It affects me. Farewell.
I never knew half his merit till now. He shall not go if I have power or art to detain him. I'll still preserve the character in which I stoop to conquer, but will undeceive my papa, who perhaps may laugh him out of his resolution.
Next time, I've done my duty. She's got the jewels again, that's a sure thing. But she believes it was all a mistake of the servants.
But my dear cousin, sure you won't forsake us in this distress? If she in the least suspects that I'm going off, I shall certainly be locked up. Or sent to my Aunt Pettigrew's, which is 10 times worse.
Oh, to be sure. Aunts of all kinds are damn bad things. But what can I do? I've got you a pair of horses that'll fly like whistle jacket, and I'm sure you can't say but I've courted you nicely before her face. Here she comes. We must court a bit or two more for fear she should suspect us. Sit with me on the love seat.
Well, I was greatly fluttered, to be sure. But my son tells me it was all a mistake of the servants. I shan't be easy, however, till they are fairly married. And then let her keep her own fortune. But what do I see? Fondling together as I'm alive. I never saw Tony so sprightly before.
Have I caught you, my pretty darling? What billing, exchanging stolen glances and broken murmurs?
As for murmurs, Mother, we grumble a little now and then, to be sure, but there's no love lost between us.
A mere sprinkling, Tony, upon the flame, only to make it burn brighter. Cousin Tony promises to give us more of his company at home. Indeed, he shan't leave us any more. It won't leave us, Cousin Tony, will it?
Oh, it's a pretty creature. No, I'd sooner leave a hare in her form, the dogs in full cry, or my horse in a pound than leave you when you smile upon one so. Your laugh makes you so becoming.
Agreeable, cousin. Who can help admiring that natural humour, that pleasant, broad, red, thoughtless...
I'm sure I always loved Cousin Con's hazel eyes and her pretty long fingers that she twists this way and that over the haspicles like a parcel of bobbins.
He would charm the bird from the tree. Oh, I was never so happy before. My boy takes after his father. Poor Mr. Lumpkin. Exactly. The jewels, my dear Con, shall be yours incontinently. Oh. You shall have them. Dear sweet boy, my dear. Oh. You shall be married tomorrow, and we'll put off the rest of his education. Oh, like Dr. Drowsy's sermons. To a fitter opportunity.
Quiet. I've got your letter for your worship.
Oh, give it to my mama. She reads all my letters first.
Oh, I'd orders to deliver it into your own hands.
Who does it come from?
Oh, your worship mustn't ask after the letter itself.
I wish I could read to know.
I'm done. A letter to him from Hastings. I know the hand. If my aunt sees it, we are ruined forever. I'll keep her employed a little if I can.
But I have not told you, madam, of my cousin's smart answer just now to Mr. Marlowe. We so laughed! You must know, madam.
This way a little.
He must not hear us.
Damn cramped piece of penmanship as ever I saw in my life. I can read your print hand very well, but here there are such handles and shanks and dashes, one can scarce tell the head from the tail. To Anthony Lumpkin Esquire. Well, it's very odd. I can read the outside of my letters where my own name is well enough, but when I come to open it, oh, it's all buzz. Oh, that's hard, very hard. For the inside of the letter is always the cream of the correspondence.
Very well, so my son was too hard for the philosopher.
Yes, madam.
But you must hear the rest, madam. Oh. A little more this way.
You'll hear
how he puzzled. He seems strangely puzzled now himself, methinks.
Oh, it's a damned up-and-down hand, as if it was disguised in liquor. Dear Squire. Aye, that's that. Then there's an M and a T and an S. Oh, but whether the next be a Z or an R, confound me, I cannot tell.
Oh, what's that, my dear? Oh. Can I give you any assistance?
Pray, Aunt,
let me read it. Nobody reads a cramp hand better than I.
Do you know who it is from?
Can't tell, except from Dick Ginger, the feeder.
Aye, so it is. Dear Squire, hoping that you're in health, as I am at this present, the gentleman of the Shagbag Club has cut the gentleman of Goose Green quite out a feather.
Oh.
The odds... odd battle.
Yeah.
Long fighting. Here, it's all about cocks and fighting. It's of no consequence. Here, put it up.
happiness.
I tell you, miss, it's of all the consequence in the world. I would not lose the rest of it for a guinea. Here, Mother, do you make it out? Of no consequence.
How's this? Dear Squire, I am now waiting for Miss Neville with the postchaise and pair at the bottom of the garden. But I find my horses yet unable to perform the journey. I expect you'll assist us with a pair of fresh horses, as you've promised. Dispatch is necessary, as the hag... Aye, the hag, your mother, will otherwise suspect us, yours Hastings. Grant me patience. I shall run distracted. My rage chokes me!
I hope, madam, you'll suspend your resentment for a few moments and not impute to me any impertinence or sinister design that belongs to another.
Fine spoken, madam. You are the most miraculously polite and quite the very pink of courtesy and circumspection, madam. And you, you great ill-fucker. Oh, it's scared and upset to keep your mouth shut. Were you two joined against me? But I'll defeat all your plots in a moment. As for you, madam, since you have got a pair of horses ready, it would be cruel to disappoint them. So, if you please, instead of running away with your spark, prepare this very moment to run off with me. No. Your old Aunt Pedigree will keep you secure, I'll warrant me.
No.
You too, sir, may mount your horse and guard us upon the way.
Oh,
here, Thomas! I'll show you that I wish you better than you do yourselves. Come, cousiners, follow me.
Roger! Diggory! Harness the horses!
Pitbull! Pack Miss Neville's trunk!
Oh! So now I'm completely ruined.
Aye, that's a sure thing.
What better could be expected from being connected with such a stupid fool? And after all the nods and signs I made him...
By the laws, miss, it was your own cleverness and not my stupidity that did your business. You were so nice and so busy with your shag bags and your goose-turd greens that I thought you could never be making believe.
Sir, sir. I find by my servant that you have shown my letter and betrayed us. Was this well done, young gentleman?
Here's another. Ask Miss there who betrayed you. Ecod, it was her doing, not mine.
So I have been finely used here among you. Rendered contemptible, driven into ill manners, despised, insulted, laughed at.
Here's another. We shall have old Bedlam broke loose presently.
And there, sir, is the gentleman to whom we all owe every obligation.
What can I say to him? A mere boy, an idiot, whose ignorance and age are a protection.
A poor, contemptible booby that would but disgrace correction.
Yet with cunning and malice enough to make himself merry with all our embarrassment.
An insensible cub, complete with tricks and mischief.
Go! Damn it! I'll fight you both, one after the other, with baskets.
Baskets? As for him, he's below resentment. But your conduct, Mr. Hastings, requires an explanation. You knew of my mistakes, yet would not undeceive me.
Tortured as I am with my own disappointments, is this a time for explanations? It is not friendly, Mr. Marvel.
But, sir...
Miss Neville, what are you about?
Mr. Marlowe, we had not ourselves realized your mistake till it was too late to undeceive you. Be you pacified?
My mistress desires you'll get ready immediately, madam. The horses are putting to. Your hat and things are in the next room. We're to go 30 miles before morning.
Well, well, I'll come presently.
Was it well done, sir, to assist in rendering me ridiculous? To hang me out for the scorn of all my acquaintance? Depend upon it, sir, I shall expect an explanation.
Was it well done, sir, if you're upon that subject, to deliver what I entrusted to yourself to the care of another, sir?
Mr. Hastings, Mr. Marlowe, why will you increase my distress by this groundless dispute? I implore, I entreat you.
I implore, madam, my mistress is impatient.
I come. Pray. Be pacified. If I leave you thus, I shall die with apprehension.
Your fan, muff, and gloves, madam. The horses are waiting.
Oh, Mr. Marlowe, if you knew what a scene of constraint and ill nature lies before me, I'm sure it would convert your resentment into pity.
I am so distracted with a variety of passions that I don't know what I do. Forgive me, madam. George, Forgive me. You know my hasty temper and should not exasperate it.
The torture of my situation is my only excuse.
Well, my dear Hastings, if you have that esteem for me that I think... that I am sure you have, your constancy for 3 years will but increase the happiness of our future connexion. If...
Miss Neville! Constance! Where Constance is here!
I'm coming! Well, constancy. Remember, constancy is the word. Farewell.
Farewell, my dearest. Oh, my heart. How can I support this? To be so near happiness and such happiness.
You see now, young gentleman, the effects of your folly? Eh? What might be amusement to you is here disappointment and even distress.
God, I've hit it! It's here! Your hands, yours and yours, my poor crabstick. My boots there, ho!
Aye, sir.
Meet me 2 hours hence at the bottom of the garden, and if you don't find Tony Lumpkin a more good-natured fellow than you thought, I'll give you leave to run me through the guts with a shoulder of mutton, and you shall have Bet Bouncer into the bargain. Come along! My boots there, ho!
You saw the old lady and Miss Neville drive off, you say?
Yes, Your Honour. They went off in a postcoach and the young squire went on horseback. They're 30 miles off by this time.
Then all my hopes are over.
Yes, sir, and old Sir Charles has arrived. He and the old gentleman of the house have been laughing and Mr. Marlowe's been staying this half hour.
Sir Charles knows me. I must not be seen. So, now to my fruitless appointment at the bottom of the garden. This is about the time...
The peremptory tone in which he sent forth his sublime commands.
What? And the reserve with which I suppose he treated all your advances.
Hey, and yet he might have seen something in me above a common innkeeper, too.
Yes, Dick, but he mistook you for an uncommon innkeeper.
Well, I'm in too good spirits to think of anything but joy. Mm. Oh, yes, my dear friend. This union of our families will make our personal friendship hereditary. And though my daughter's fortune is but small...
Why, Dick, will you talk of fortune to me? My son is possessed of more than a competence already, yeah, and can want nothing but a good and virtuous girl to share his happiness and increase it. If they like each other, as you say they do.
If, man, I tell you, they do like each other. My daughter as good as told me so.
Yeah, but girls are apt to flatter themselves, you know.
I saw him grasp her hand in the warmest manner myself. And here he comes to put you out of your ifs, I warrant him.
Well, sir. Well.
I come, Father, once more to ask pardon of Mr. Hardcastle for my strange conduct. I can scarce reflect on my insolence without confusion.
Oh, tut, boy, a trifle. You take it too gravely. An hour or two's laughing with my daughter will set all to rights again. She'll never like you the worse for it.
So I shall always be proud of her approbation.
Approbation is but a cold word, Mr. Marlowe. If I am not deceived, you have something more than approbation thereabouts. You take me, eh, eh?
Really, sir, I have not that happiness.
Oh, come, boy. I'm an old fella and knows what's what as well as you that are younger. I know what has passed between you, but mum, eh? Mum.
Sure, sir. Nothing has passed between us but the most profound respect on my side and the most distant reserve on hers. You don't think, sir, that my impudence has been passed upon all the rest of the family?
Impudence? No, I don't say that. Not
quite impudence. Though girls like to be played with and rumpled a little too sometimes. But she has told no tales, I assure you.
I never gave her the slightest cause.
Then you are not your father's son,
sir? Ah, well, I like modesty in its place well enough, but this is overacting, young gentleman. You may be open. Your father and I will like you the better for it.
Aye, Charles, let's hear you.
May I die, sir, if I ever...
I tell you, she don't dislike you, and as I'm sure you like her...
Yes, sir.
I see no reason why you should not be joined as fast as the parson can tie you.
Indeed, if the good Dr. Drowsy can get up to speed.
But him,
your
sir...
Your father approves the match. I admire it. Every moment's delay will be doing mischief.
But so, why won't you hear me? By all that's just and true, I never gave Miss Hardcastle the slightest mark of my attachment, or even the most distant hint to suspect me of affection. We had but one interview, and that was formal, modest, and uninteresting.
This fellow's formal, modest impudence is beyond bearing.
And you never grasped her hand or made any protestations?
As heaven is my witness, I came down in obedience to your commands. Why, I saw the lady without emotion and parted without reluctance. I hope you'll exact no further proofs of my duty, nor prevent me from leaving a house in which I suffer so many... mortifications.
I'm astonished at the air of sincerity with which he parted.
And I'm astonished at the deliberate intrepidity of his assurance.
I dare pledge my life and honor upon its truth.
Well, here comes my daughter, and I would stake my happiness upon her veracity. Kate, come hither, Charles. Sit. Now answer me sincerely and without reserve. Has Mr. Marlowe made you any professions of love and affection?
Oh, well, the question is very abrupt, sir. But since you require unreserved sincerity, I think he has.
You see?
And pray, madam, have you and my son had more than one interview?
Yes, sir, several.
You see?
But did he profess any attachment?
A lasting one.
Did he talk of love?
Much, sir.
Amazing. And all this formally.
Formally.
Now, my friend, I hope you're satisfied.
And how did he behave, madam?
Well, as most professed admirers do. He said some civil things of my face, talked much of his want of merit and the greatness of mine, mentioned his heart, gave a short tragedy speech, and ended with pretended rapture.
Now I'm perfectly convinced. Indeed, I know his conversation among women to be modest and reticent. This forward, canting, ranting manner by no means describes him. And I am confident he never sat for the picture.
Then what, sir, if I should convince you to your face of my sincerity? Okay. If you and my papa, in about half an hour, will place yourselves behind that screen, you shall hear him declare his passion to me in person.
Agreed. And if I find him what you describe, all my happiness in him must have an end.
And if you don't find him what I describe, I fear my happiness must never have a beginning.
Come, Charles, let us warm the minutes with some punch, eh?
Stop us! Stop us!
Here for a fellow who probably takes a delight in mortifying me. He never intended to be punctual. And I'll wait no longer. What do I see? It is he. And perhaps with news of my Constance. Ah, my honest squire. I now find you a man of your word. This looks like friendship.
Aye, I'm your friend. And the best friend you have in the world, if you knew but all. Oh. This riding by night, by the by, is cursedly tiresome. It shook me worse than the basket of a stagecoach.
But how? Where did you leave your fellow travellers? Are they in safety? Are they housed?
25 miles in 3 hours is no such bad driving. The poor beasts are all sweated out. Dang me, but I'd rather ride 40 miles after a fox than 10 with such vermin.
Well, but where have you left the ladies? I die with impatience.
Left them? Why, where should I leave them but where I found them?
This is a riddle.
Riddle me this, then. What's that goes round the house and round the house and never touches the house?
I'm still astray.
Why, that's it, man! I've led them astray. By jingo, there's not a pond or a pothole within 5 miles of the place, but they can tell the taste.
Oh, I see. I understand you. You took them in a round while they supposed themselves going forward. And so you've at last brought them home again.
You shall hear. I first took them down Featherbed Lane, where we stuck fast in the mud. I then rattled them crack over the stones of up and down the hill, and I then introduced them to the gibbet on Heavy Tree Heath. And from that, with a circumbendibus, I fairly lodged them in the horse pond at the bottom of the garden.
But no accident, I hope.
Oh, no, no. Only Mother is confoundedly frightened. She thinks herself 40 mile off. She's sick of the journey and the nags can scarce crawl. So, if your own horses be ready, you may whip off with Cousin, and I'll be bound that no soul here can budge a foot to follow you.
My dear friend, how can I be grateful?
Now it's dear friend, noble squire. Just now it was all idiot, cub, and run me through the guts. Damn your way of fighting, I say. After we take a knock in this part of the country, we kiss and be friends. But if you had run me through the guts, then I should be dead, and you might go kiss the hangman.
The rebuke is just. But I must hasten to relieve Miss Neville. If you keep the old lady employed, I promise to take care of the young one.
Never fear me.
Oh, here she comes. Vanish. Oh,
she's got from the pond and draggled up to the waist like a mermaid.
That last jolt that laid us against the quicksand hedge has done
my business.
Alack, Mama, it was all your own fault. What? It would be for running away by night without knowing an inch of the way.
Oh, no. I wish we were at home again. I've never met so many accidents in so short a journey. Drenched in the mud, overturned in a ditch, stuck fast in a slope, jolted to a jelly, and at last to lose our way. Oh, whereabouts do you think we are, Tony?
By my guess, we should be upon Crackskull Common, about 40 miles from home.
Notorious spot of my own country. I only want a robbery to make a complete night on.
Nah, don't be afraid, Mama. Don't be afraid. Two of the five that kept here are hanged. And the other three may not find us. Yeah, don't be afraid. Is that a man that's galloping behind us? Oh, no, it's only a trick. Don't be afraid.
The fright will certainly kill me.
Oh, do you see anything like a black hat moving behind the thicket? No, it's only a cow. Don't be afraid, Mama. Don't be afraid.
Get my father by all that's unlucky. Come to take one of his night walks.
Ah, it's a highwayman with pistols as long as my arm. A damned ill-looking fellow.
Defenders, you approach us.
You hide yourself in that thicket and leave me to manage you. If there be any danger, I'll cough and cry. When I cough, be sure to keep close.
Oh,
I'm either mistaken or I heard voices of people in want of help. Oh, Tony, is that you? What a night. I did not expect you so soon back. Are your mother and her charge in safety?
Yeah, very safe, sir, at my Aunt Pedigree's.
A death! A final danger!
40 miles in 3 hours? Sure, that's too much, my youngster.
Stout horses and willing minds make short journeys, as they say.
Oh, sure he'll do the dear boy no harm.
But I heard a voice here. I should be glad to know from whence it came.
It was I. Sir, talking to myself, sir, I was saying that 40 miles in 3 hours was very good going. As to be sure it was. I've got a sort of cold by being out in the weather. We'll go in, if you please.
But if you talk to yourself, you did not answer yourself. I am certain I heard two voices, and I am resolved to find the other aunt.
He's going to fire me up!
What need you do, sir, if I tell you? I'll lay down my life for the truth, sir. I'll tell you all,
sir. No, I'll tell you! I will not be detained. I insist on seeing. It's in vain to expect I'll believe you.
Oh, yes! You murdered my poor boy, my darling father! Hey, good gentleman! Wish your rage upon me! Take my money and my life, but spare that young gentleman, spare my child, if you have any mercy.
My wife, as I am a Christian, from whence can she come, or what does this mean?
Oh, take compassion on us, good Mr. Highwayman. Take our money, our watches, all we have, but spare our lives. We will never bring you to justice, indeed we won't, good Mr. Highwayman.
I believe the woman's out of her senses. Why, Dorothy, don't you know me?
Mr. Hancock! Oh, my fear is blinding me. Oh, who, my dear, could have expected to meet you here? And
this frightful place so far from home? What has brought you to follow us?
Well, sure, Dorothy, you've not lost your wits. So far from home when you are within 40 yards of your own door.
What?
This is one of your old tricks, you graceless rogue, you. Don't you know the gate and the mulberry tree? And don't you remember the horse pond, my dear?
Yes, I shall remember the horse pond as long as I live. I have caught my death in it. And it is to you, you graceless varlet, I owe all this. I'll teach you to a prude, your mother, I will you.
Okay, come, mother. All the parish says you've spoiled me, so you may take the fruits of...
Oh, I'll spoil you. I will you. Come here,
There's morality, however, in his reply.
My dear Constance, why will you deliberate thus? If we delay a moment, all is lost forever. Pluck up a little resolution, and we shall soon be out of the reach of her malignity.
I find it impossible. My spirits are so sunk with the agitations I have suffered that I am unable to face any new danger. 2 or 3 years' patience will at last crown us with happiness.
Oh, such a tedious delay is worse than inconstancy. Let us fly, my charmer. Let us date our happiness from this very moment. Perish fortune. Love and content will increase what we possess beyond a monarch's review. Oh, let me prevail.
No, Mr. Hastings, no. Prudence once more comes to my relief, and I will obey its dictates. In the moment of passion, fortune may be despised, but it ever produces a lasting repentance.
My dear Constance...
Nay, I'm resolved to apply to Mr. Hardcastle's compassion and justice for redress.
But though he had the will, he has not the power to relieve you.
But he has influence, and upon that I am resolved to rely.
I have no hopes. But since you persist, I must reluctantly obey you.
This way, Sir Charles.
What a situation am I in? If what you say appears, I shall then find a guilty son. If what he says be true, I shall then lose one that of all others I most wished for a daughter.
I am proud of your approbation, and to show I merit it, if you place yourself as I directed, behind this screen, you shall hear his explicit declarations. Oh, but he comes. Quickly, fetch my father.
I'll do him and keep him to the appointment.
Oh, sir.
Though prepared for setting out, I come once more to take leave. Nor did I, till this moment, know the pain I feel in the separation.
I believe those sufferings cannot be very great, sir, which you can so easily remove. A day or two longer, perhaps, might lessen your uneasiness by showing you the little value of what you now think proper to regret.
This girl every moment improves upon me. It must not be, madam. I have already trifled too long with my heart. My very pride begins to submit to my passion. The disparity of education and fortune, the anger of a parent, and the contempt of my equals begin to lose their weight. And nothing can restore me to myself but this painful effort of resolution.
Then go, sir. I'll urge nothing more to detain you. Though my family be as good as hers that you came down to visit, and my education, I hope, not inferior... What are these advantages without equal affluence? I must remain contented with the slight approbation of imputed merit. I must have only the mockery of your addresses while all your serious aims are fixed on fortune.
Here, behind the screen. I make no noise.
That engaged my Kate covers him with confusion at last.
By heavens, madam, fortune was ever my smaller consideration. Your beauty had first caught my eye, for who could see that without emotion? But every moment that I converse with you steals in some new grace, oh, heightens the picture and gives it stronger expression. What at first seemed rustic plainness now appears refined simplicity. What seemed forward assurance now strikes me as the result of courageous innocence and conscious virtue.
What can it mean? He amazes me. I told you how it would be.
Tush! I am now determined to stay, madam. And I have too good an opinion of my father's discernment when he sees you to doubt his approbation.
No, Mr. Marlowe, I will not, cannot detain you. Do you think I could suffer a connection in which there is the smallest room for repentance? Do you think I would take the mean advantage of a transient passion to load you with confusion? Do you think I could ever relish that happiness which was acquired by lessening yours?
By all that's good, I can have no happiness but what's in your power to grant me. Nor shall I ever feel repentance, but in not having seen your merits before, I will stay, even contrary to your wishes. And though you should persist to shun me, I will make my respectful assiduities atone for the levity of my past conduct.
I was never so confounded. I told you how it would be. He'll deny every syllable of this to our faces.
Sir, I must entreat you'll desist. As our acquaintance began, so let it end, in indifference. I might have given an hour or two to levity. But seriously, Mr. Marlowe, do you think I could ever submit to a connection where I must appear mercenary and you imprudent? Do you think I could ever be over-eager for the confident addresses of a secure admirer?
Does this look like security? Does this look like confidence?
Oh, sir.
No, madam, every moment that shows me your merit only serves to increase my diffidence and confusion.
Nay, sir.
Here, let me continue.
I can hold it no longer.
What?
Get up, Charles. Charles, how hast thou deceived me? Is this your indifference, your uninteresting conversation?
Your cold contempt, your formal interview. What have you to say now?
Well, that I'm all amazement. What can it mean?
It means that you can say and unsay things at pleasure. That you can address a lady in private and deny it in public. That you have one story for us and another for my daughter.
Daughter? This lady? Your daughter?
Yes, sir. My only daughter. My Kate. Well, who else should she be?
Oh, the devil!
Yes, sir. That very identical, tall, squinting lady you were pleased to take me for. She that you addressed as the mild, modest, sentimental man of gravity and the bold, forward, agreeable rattle of the ladies' club.
Oh, soon there's no bearing this. It's worse than death.
In which of your characters, sir, will you give us leave to address you? As the faltering gentleman with looks on the ground that speaks just to be barely heard and hates hypocrisy? Or the loud, confident creature that keeps it up with Mrs. Mantrap and old Miss Biddy Buckskin till 3 in the morning.
Oh, curse on my noisy head. I never attempted to be impudent yet that I was not taken down. I must be gone.
By the hand of my body, but you shall not. I see it was all a mistake, and I am rejoiced to find it. Oh. You shall not stir, I tell you.
Oh,
I know she'll forgive you. Won't you forgive him, Kate? We'll all forgive you. Take courage, man.
Come, sir. Shall I show you my work above stairs?
Oh, well, Charles, let us find Mrs. Hardcastle and give her the good news, eh?
What?
Rocketing and ranting. I'd as soon marry our saddleback sow as yon madam overblown.
Ah, Dorothy, my love, hey.
Are you recovered from your adventure?
I feel sure our news will restore your spirits.
So they're gone off. Let them go. I care not.
Who gone?
My dutiful niece and her gentleman, Mr. Hastings, from town. He who came down with our modest visitor here.
Oh, my honest George Hastings, as worthy a fellow as lives.
and the girl could not have made a more prudent choice.
Then, by the hand of my body, I'm proud of the connexion.
Well, if he has taken away the lady, he has not taken her fortune. That remains in this family to console us for her loss.
Sure, Dorothy, you would not be so mercenary.
Aye, that's my affair, not yours.
But you know if your son, when of age, refuses to marry his cousin, her whole fortune is then at her own disposal.
Aye, but he's not of age, and she has not thought proper to wait for his refusal.
Come, Miss Neville, here is Mr. Hardcastle.
What? Return so soon? I begin not to like it.
For my late attempt to fly off with your niece, let my present confusion be my punishment. We are now come back to appeal to your justice and humanity. By her father's consent, I first paid her my addresses, and our passions were first founded in duty.
Since his death, I have been obliged to stoop to dissimulation to avoid oppression. In an hour of levity, I was ready even to give up my fortune to secure my choice. But I'm now recovered from the delusion and hope for your fair judgment. Although my aunt would commit me to a different sentence.
This is all but the whining end of a modern novel.
Be it what it will, I'm glad they have come back to reclaim their due. Come hither, Tony boy. Do you refuse this lady's hand whom I now offer you?
What signifies my refusing? You know I can't refuse her till I'm of age, father.
While I thought concealing your age, boy, was likely to conduce to your improvement, I concurred with your mother's desire to keep it secret.
Mr. Hardcastle!
But since I find she turns it to a wrong use, I must now declare you have been of age these last 3 months.
Oh, of age? Am I of age, father?
Above 3 months.
Then you'll see the first use I'll make of my liberty. Witness all men by these presents that I, Anthony Lumpkin Esquire of Blank Place, refuse you, Constantia Neville, spinster of no place at all, for my true and lawful wife. So, Constance Neville may marry whom she pleases, and Tony Lumpkin is his own man again!
Oh, brave squire!
My worthy friend!
Thy undutiful offspring!
Joy, my dear George, I give you joy sincerely. And could I prevail upon my little tyrant here to be less arbitrary, I too should profess to be the happiest man alive. How say you, Kate?
Come, madam, you are now driven to the very last scene of all your contrivances. I know you like him. I'm sure he loves you. And you must and shall have him.
And I say so, too. And Mr. Marlowe, if she makes as good a wife as she has a daughter, I don't believe you'll ever repent your bargain. Oh. So, now, to supper. Tomorrow we shall gather all the poor of the parish about us, and the mistakes of the night shall be crowned with a merry morning. So, boy, take her. And as you have been mistaken in the mistress, my wish is that you may never be mistaken in the wife.
Be warned, sir, afore he join hands, for women ain't all that they seem. Think long afore reading the bands, they'll run me down, they'll wear their schemes. So pluck 'em and pitch 'em and tumble and ditch 'em. Don't truck with their romantic dreams.
Don't truck with their romantic dreams. Now home, sir, with all your advice, love weakens the firmest of wills, and men will go seeking a wife where once they'd only be seeking thrills. Before we can bed them, we'll woo them and wed them. For love, we will study new skills. For love, we will study new skills.
Now girls will make dutiful wives, applying themselves right from the start. But when they won't give all their lives, just because they relinquish their heart in love, you respect us, not vanquish or face us, for we never have got their part, and stooping to cold her is their art. For we never have got their part,
and stooping to cold her is their art.
In She Stoops to Conquer by Oliver Goldsmith, Julia McKenzie played Mrs. Hardcastle and Clive Francis Mr. Hardcastle. Tony Lumpkin was played by Adrian Scarborough and Kate Hardcastle was played by Amanda Root. Young Marlowe was Martin Ball, Hastings Jonathan Cake and Constance Neville Kathy Sarah. Norman Rodway was Sir Charles Marlowe, Terry Malloy, Landlord Twist and Jeremy, Ian Brooker, Diggory and Master Muggins, Richard Neal, Roger and Master Slang, and Naomi Harris, Pimple and Bet Bouncer. The adaptation and additional lyrics were by Sue Wilson. The music was composed and played by Anthea Gomez with Catherine Gittings and Martha Ann Brooks. She Stoops to Conquer was produced in Birmingham by Sue Wilson.